From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of March 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. Bruce Sherrick will be here to discuss the crop insurance decisions producers and landowners are making at this point and need to have done and completed by the time we get to the middle of the month. And we'll talk about the war in Ukraine as it relates to food supplies across the planet and what the United States may be able to consider. Scott Irwin, agricultural economist, dropped out CRP yesterday. We'll figure out what he meant by that, and we'll do it all right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, May corn in Chicago settled $7.47¾ a bushel, up 22¾. July at $7.03½, 9¾ higher. In December at $6.12, up 2¾. May soybeans, 4¾ higher, $16.67¾ the settlement price. July down 1¼ at $16.32¾. November beans at $14.54, 1½ cents higher. The bean meal futures up $5.40. Bean oil for the day at $74.81, down $1.06. Wheat futures soft red at $11.34, limit higher up 75 cents. July up 75 as well at $11.16¼. And the hard red 66¾ higher at $11.40¼. Matt Bennett now joins us from agmarket.net. Good afternoon, Matt. Thanks for being with us. So let's get right into this. How is Chicago handling the war in Ukraine?
Well, it's been an interesting ride for sure. You saw crude oil, for instance, rally to $118 on the overnight market, which was just way above any level anyone would have assumed. You're $10 higher. Actually, as you and I talked, though, we're $1.30 lower. And so we're $9. Well, I mean, we weren't $10 higher. I guess we're $8 higher. But right now we're well off the highs, almost $10 off the highs. And so how has the trade been handling, I think, is a very interesting dilemma. You look, for instance, at corn and wheat. There's no question that wheat has been the bigger gainer of the two. I mean, up the limit again today, front three contracts. The May contracts got an incredibly large amount of contracts pooled up at one time or another. I mean, they're talking just an unbelievable amount of buyers still. Whereas on corn, we were locked up the limit for a while on May. Definitely going to settle off there. And then you look over at beans, and beans just really aren't paying much attention. So it's a tale of different stories, depending on which commodity. Wheat's definitely the one that's gaining the most.
Because it is Russia that is the number one exporter of wheat on the planet, I'm wondering if it matters so much that there's a war in Ukraine, or whether it's about being able to get freight in and out of the Black Sea. And what happens if things open up?
You've got to assume that if everything for some reason was able to move back towards a peaceful situation, that obviously this wheat market would most likely get hammered in a major fashion. But how quickly can you get everything straightened out is definitely a great question. We've got people we talk to, whether you're talking corn, beans, sunflower, Ukrainian producers, that are giving us some indication that there's some serious questions as to whether they'll be able to plant this year. They think they'll be able to, but maybe not everywhere. For instance, some of them don't even have a hold of seed. They're at the same latitude as what we are. So you're looking at a very similar planting window. But as far as Russia is concerned, obviously it won't be near the hindrance that you see with Ukraine. It's probably going to be business as usual, it would be my assumption. And so I think your shipping situation is definitely one to keep a close eye on, because it's going to be pretty hard to go into that portion of the world. First of all, the maritime division, if you will, in Ukraine have said, we're not doing anything for the time being. We're not going to be exporting any product whatsoever. And so you've got to assume that that's going to get lifted at some point, but you just don't know exactly how that's going to manifest itself. So I think one of the main things to watch is what do corn export sales look like? I mean, today they were abysmal, quite frankly. Inspections have been pretty darn good lately, and there's quite a lineup, I think, to pick up U.S. corn. And I think that's going to continue, but I would sure like to see sales pick up. We had a morning wire announcement this morning. I think that's going to be a regular occurrence coming up, which could really change the dynamics, not only of U.S. exports, but the final carryout, which I, as I've told you all along, I feel like USDA at 154 is well above where we're going to end up. And at this stage of the game, I think you might be closer to 1 than 1.5.
And in the interview we'll hear in just a moment, and I know you've already listened to part of this, Scott Irwin talks about the crops coming out of the Black Sea and it not just being about new crop, but also about old crop. And that means corn's not going to come out of that country. So I suppose that will reconfigure trade flow across the planet, and farmers, and you will have to help them, need to manage that risk. How do they do it?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And so I wrote a blog for Farm Futures that will be on their site. And basically what I'm talking about is two things. First of all, in 2012, as you remember, Todd, a lot of folks sold into that rally, probably a little too much at times. And I think, some people got a little bit oversold because we saw prices we hadn't seen in some time and, made our all-time highs there that summer right before we got into harvest time. You don't want to get oversold on physical product. You've got to stay flexible. And then let's look at 2008. You look at 2008 into the summer time frame, we rallied all the way fairly close to $8. I believe 788 was our high in 2008. But if people don't realize it, first part of December, as December was going into delivery, we actually traded these corn under $3. And so while we don't want to get oversold and we want to stay flexible in our plan, that doesn't mean we do nothing. Got to be very cautious as to let these really good prices get past us without locking something in. So we've been big advocates of setting a real strong floor under the market. Now let the upside run. If you're fortunate, I guess, and the market rallies to where your put's worthless, a pretty good chance, there's a certainty you're going to be selling December corn well above $6.15 or $6 or whatever strike you choose. So those two things I think are extremely important. Don't get oversold. Stay really flexible, but don't sit here and do nothing.
Do you suppose the recent price rises in Chicago will cause producers to change their acreage planting decisions?
That's a good question as well. I think a couple of things come to mind. I think, first of all, you look, for instance, at a 590 December corn price for an average for February. You look at 1433 for beans. Both of those lock in pretty darn good income for most folks. I obviously realize that fertilizer prices are sky high, but most people have already got all their fertilizer on other than anhydrous. And so that discussion is certainly going to impact things. And I think whenever you get into that discussion, you got to ask yourself, what kind of production history do you have? I think you get in the state of Illinois, probably going to retain a lot of corn acres, even where anhydrous is yet to be applied. Maybe when you get in the southern part of the state, that won't be as true. But I do think in the breadbasket of the I states, you'll retain most of those acres. But you get outside that into the fringe, and it's going to be tough unless you've got an excessively good APH, to throw $1,000 an acre into a crop, even with 615 corn. But keep in mind, 615 corn, 25 cents above the average price for the month of February, and we just finalized that on Monday. So this has been a really interesting occurrence that we've seen, and a really good opportunity for producers, to at least lay off some risk, especially if they're deciding to go heavy corn. So it's going to be a very interesting dynamic right now. I think ag market guys, we're probably around 90 and 90, but we certainly haven't given our official estimate for the March 31st yet. We haven't been asked to, and we're still, cussing and discussing those numbers. And I think we won't get too far from 90 and 90, because I do think there's going to be a lot of bean acres this year.
Well, we'll probably ask you next week about those numbers at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I bet that you and Ed Usett get asked about them at the Commodity Classic on Thursday when you open that morning up there in New Orleans as well. By the way, Ed will be on the air with us on Tuesday afternoon. So if you're at the Beef House, you'll be able to talk with you directly on that day and then hear Ed that afternoon on the Closing Market Report. We sure are glad you're coming over to visit with us at the Covington, Indiana conference as well.
Yeah, I'm sure looking forward to it. It's always a great time, and I think everyone sure has looked forward to getting out in person. Most events we've been able to do this year have been well attended, and I kind of expect the same thing here next week.
You bet. Hey, thanks so much. That is Matt Bennett. He is at agmarket.net. We'll join us over at the Beef House on Tuesday. You can 217-333-7300 or willag.org to buy your ticket today. You know, the war in Ukraine has University of Illinois agricultural economist Scott Irwin thinking quite a little bit about how the United States might deal with a production shortfall from the Black Sea region that could destabilize areas of the world and increase food prices in the United States. I asked him earlier today why that was the case and what a production shortfall there would do.
The Ukraine alone is one of the major grain producing areas in the world. And the Black Sea area in general, as it's called, which includes Russia's grain producing areas, is just enormous. For example, Russia's the number one producer and exporter of wheat in the world. And all of a sudden, all of that is up in question.
And it has been putting upside pressure into the marketplace for uncertainty about the exports from that area. What happens if it's taken out of production? Just the export market for corn, I suppose, some of the wheat from Ukraine in the 2022-23 growing season.
Well, I think that there are two issues, Todd. One is to start with the old crop. Trade estimates that I've seen suggest that there are 600 million bushels of corn. Basically, it's already been contracted for export because Ukraine exports virtually their entire corn crop, a little under 2 billion. They kind of go between 1.5 and 2 billion bushels a year. It's trapped. And I don't see any way that that's going to get out of there very easily for weeks, maybe months. So you've got an old crop problem of moving stocks of grain that are there. And then you have, in some sense, the even bigger problem, which is what will end up getting planted this spring, because the war has started up pretty much at the beginning of the planting season. And so that potentially puts a huge hole in global grain balance sheets if you just take Ukraine's grain production, corn, wheat, and probably sunflowers in that order are the most important to the world markets. And so it's a huge issue.
It's a year's plus worth of grain from Ukraine that may be taken out of the marketplace. How should the United States think about what to do as an issue as it relates to the price of food and making up for some of this if it can?
Well, I think we need to be now, under these extraordinary wartime circumstances, be thinking outside the box. And one outside of the box suggestion I made yesterday on Twitter was maybe consider opening up the Conservation Reserve Program acreage for 1 year cropping. It may not be practical, may not be legal, but my point was is to really try to get people thinking and realizing because this has happened so fast, Todd, that and it's so big that we're just going to have to think outside the box. And that's why I put out what I did, is mainly to get the conversation started about thinking outside the box, because this is not going to go away quickly, in my opinion now. And it's just a huge supply shock to global grain markets, which, as you said, have follow-on effects on the price of food. We can handle that here in the U.S. It'll be painful, but these could be particularly difficult questions in lower-income countries that rely on, say, wheat exports from the Ukraine, like Egypt, where the population spends a much higher proportion of their incomes on food. This could be a big problem for their domestic stability.
One final comment I'd like from you. Last fall, you and Joe Janssen said, hey, the price of corn tells us there may be 96 million acres planted this spring by farmers. You came back and doubled down on that in January and said, we're still staying with it. Have you changed your mind yet?
I haven't fundamentally changed my mind. The market has changed since last fall in January, starting in December with the supply problems down in South America. The market started putting more incentives in place in terms of the soybean corn price ratio for soybeans. It flipped starting in December back towards favoring soybeans. So I would adjust my expectations now. The USDA was at 92 million corn, 88 million soybeans last week. I'm still at maybe 94 million corn and 89 million soybeans. The big difference that I have with everyone before Ukraine even started, Todd, was that I think that we're going to see an increase in the overall size of acreage in the U.S., and that's going to leave more room for planting basically of everything than most people are assuming. We'll see.
I spoke with Scott Irwin, University of Illinois agricultural economist, earlier today. If you'd like to see the video of that same conversation, it's up on our website right now at willag.org, willag.org. By the way, Scott and Joe Janssen, both agricultural economists, will be at the Spring Outlook on Tuesday next week. They'll take up all of this information and put it in context of the Ukraine-Russia issue, farm policy, and what their expectations for the coming season will be. They'll wrap up the day. Throughout the day, though, we'll take up a whole series of other conversations, including one with Bruce Sherrick about the agricultural market for land in the United States and what farmland might be worth. Bruce is the director of the Center for Farmland Research here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. He also, along with Gary Schnitke, who will be there too, does an inordinate amount of background work related to crop insurance. And I spoke with Bruce earlier today about the crop insurance decision process that producers will be making between now and the middle of the month. Asked him to start with the crop insurance prices set in February.
Thanks, Todd. Yeah, it's been a really crazy year. Corn ended up at $5.90, which is $2.02 higher than just 2 years ago, $1.32 higher than last year. And so the coverage levels that can be attained just on the price change alone are really remarkably higher. The volatility factor, which also goes into the calculation of the cost of insurance because it represents the uncertainty around price, substantially increased as well to 23 for corn. For soybeans, we ended up at 14.33 with a 19 volatility factor. Again, thinking about this just in relationship to the previous couple of years, that's $5.16 a bushel higher than just 2 years ago, a little over $2 higher than 1 year ago. And in context, the way I like to think about it is that for a high producing farm, corn insurance guaranteed revenue can be $400 higher per acre than just 2 years ago. Soybeans likewise can be $250 or so for, again, a high producing region. But this really represents a massive increase in coverage opportunity.
Let's talk about a new endorsement, PACE, that's available for producers that are applying nitrogen after they have planted in whatever form that might be. Is it something producers should consider, and how does it work?
Sort of a perfect storm to think about new issues like this. And PACE is available this year only on a limited number of acres. RMA rolls out new products generally in trial and pilot areas first, but the split application nitrogen insurance policy essentially says that if you are planning to put on basically side dress during the growth stages in corn where, you know, most people agree it's most valuable and are prevented from making that application due to weather, other production features, not simply because of lack of availability, although that's a complicated thing this year, that the insurance policy would essentially pay you or indemnify you for the yield loss, the bad outcome that occurs because you were trying to do a split nitrogen and were prevented from doing that.
Producers generally are used to crop insurance. They will use what they've had in the past. They might sometimes try to save money, but they think of it as a pretty easy decision. Is that the case this year?
Gosh, I never think it's an easy decision. You are right. A producer is about 90%, in fact, do use RP and have in the past. And it's a pretty easy thing to continue to go because it protects against both price and yield changes that might affect your available revenue. But HPE earlier in the year was really being considered heavily along with supplemental coverage or ECO or combinations of the extended coverage options. But I think one of the things that's important to look at that might in fact push the pendulum back away from that is that futures prices are now substantially above even the insurance price. So as I was making the point that prices have increased that can be used to cover your crop via crop insurance, futures prices are even higher. So think about it this way. If you have a $5.90 insured price for corn, but currently I looked 10 minutes ago or so and DEIS 22 was around $6.20. So you have a 30 cent increase already, which means that the HPE option is going to be more detrimental to you. You're saving some premium, but we've already had an increase in price. So it's increasingly likely as we get closer to the end of the sign-up period, it's increasingly likely that the harvest price comes into play. If futures prices were well below 590, and as we know, the averaging process in February determines the price, but the futures price is still what you're generating your revenue against. The HPE options don't look as good now because prices have increased through the end of February and starting into March. We don't know how much of that is because, last Thursday was a case in point when the fighting began in the Ukraine and a lot of money moved out of equities. It looked like some money just moved directly into commodities without a direct understanding of impacts on production. Wheat could be substantially impacted by what's going on in the Ukraine. But to answer your question, that was kind of my stream of consciousness response. It's not easy this year. And SCO and ECO provide different kinds of coverage. I think RP, my view is, and if you kind of look through the end of that article you referenced, RP still does the best job of cutting off the low tail, the really low revenue outcomes. So I think most people will look at that, evaluate it, contemplate their own situation and their relatedness to the county averages. You have to always remember that revenue coverage that is based on a county average may not correlate with your own farm's need for revenue. But in the end, I really expect most people to stick with RP. Picking the coverage this year when insurance is so expensive per acre may feel like a big check, but it's because you're covering a huge amount of revenue.
Thank you.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it.
Bruce Sherrick is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He will join us next Tuesday for the Spring Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You should, too. Time's running out to get your tickets, though. You can do that right now at 217-333-7300, 217-333-7300, or at willag.org.